My name is Charles, and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlantic Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that it may better carry the message of AA, and since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics may participate. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would also be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature persons have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that what you learn here may be helpful to you, to your recovery, and your understanding. David will read the preamble.
Hi, I'm David. I'm an alcoholic. The preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Thank you.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Maureen will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Maureen Roberts. I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Step four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Step five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Step eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. Step 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Step 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And step 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Bernard will read the traditions.
Hi, I'm Bernard. I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, for our group purposes, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought to never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought to never be organized, but we may create service boards or communities directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought to never be drawn into public controversy. 11, Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our information break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first 10-minute speaker is Lucy B.
Thank you. I'm Lucy. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, it's really great to be here. I'd like to thank Jen for asking me to speak. My home group in New York is the Atlanta Group. My home group in Tokyo, where I live now, is the Tokyo by the Book group. We meet on Monday nights. Hope you'll come visit us. My sobriety date is September 1st, 1999. My sponsor's name is Stacy, and I'm living happily in steps 10, 11, and 12 today. So, what it was like, I love getting to speak because it really brings me back. My life is so different today from what it was when I was still drinking. I was a pretty unhappy kid, you know. I didn't have the greatest time growing up, and it took me a long time to realize that that, you know, was alcoholism in its early stages. I never felt comfortable. I always felt separate from the world around me. I felt like there was something innately wrong with me. And when I was 11 years old, I discovered alcohol, and it made those feelings go away. It made me feel comfortable in my skin. It gave me a sense of confidence and courage, and it made me feel like I was part of. And it worked for a while. I started drinking continuously or regularly when I was about 13. And at the same time, I didn't put two and two together, but I started to get very depressed. And that was a side effect of my alcoholism, was severe, suicidal, dark depression. And when I was 14, I was hospitalized for that. And as a coincidence, my roommate in that hospital was a drug addict and an alcoholic, and she was going to these things called AA meetings. And, you know, any excuse to get out of the unit, I decided to tag along with her. And that was my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I instantly felt at home, although I didn't believe I was an alcoholic. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. Life didn't really get much better. I really liked being inpatient. I enjoyed being in rehab. But it didn't really carry over into the real world. I didn't do so well. And, you know, I was still continuing to drink, and I used other substances as well. And I was hospitalized 2 more times by the time I was 15. And by the time I got to my third hospital, the doctors had figured me out, and they told me I was an alcoholic and that I couldn't drink safely. And the only way they were going to let me out of that hospital was if I agreed to go to AA meetings every day. And I liked AA meetings. I didn't think I was a real alcoholic. I thought I was too young, but I really enjoyed meetings, and I really, really wanted to get out of rehab. So I agreed. And I went to AA for 6 months. I went every day. I even got a service commitment. And a lady that I called my sponsor, we used to drink a lot of coffee and smoke a lot of cigarettes and hang out. And, you know, nothing really changed. There's a part in the big book where it says he failed to enlarge his spiritual life, and he drank again. And that was my case exactly. I stayed dry, but I didn't experience a psychic change at all. I didn't work a step. And so sure enough, after 6 months, I decided to conduct an experiment and prove to you guys that I could drink like a normal person. And I went out and I drank one beer. And I was like, you see, I drank one beer. That was it, you know, one beer. And a few months later, I was getting drunk and high almost every day. And I got sent away by my parents to a boarding school. And it wasn't a very happy place. It wasn't, I didn't enjoy it. The worst part was that I couldn't get access to any alcohol. And I hit really a kind of a spiritual bottom. And One would think that, you know, I would see the error of my ways, you know, look at where drinking got me, but I didn't make the connection between drinking and my predicament. And so when I ran away from the school, I sort of dove into drinking headfirst and drank with a vengeance and with abandon, and I needed to get out of here. I couldn't tolerate being in my skin. And it worked for a little while, and I figured out that I just had to keep the outsides looking good. I had to get good grades, I had to get into college, I had to get a job, and you guys would stay off my back. And it worked. You know, I went to college, I did pretty well, thank you. But you know, I would have these like pendulum swings, like I almost failed out the first semester, and then I got straight A's the second semester, and it was back and forth. And I couldn't really hold it together, and I was miserable. And so fast forward a few years, I had some other outside issues. I had an eating disorder, and I was in a fellowship for that. And by the grace of God, my sponsor in that fellowship was also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she suggested to me that my drinking might be out of control. And I had a moment of grace where I was willing to put down alcohol and just see what happened. And I put down alcohol, but I didn't work the program, and for like 18 months, and my life started to get really dark and really small, and I couldn't answer the phone anymore, and I couldn't go out, and I was really at the jumping off place. I was pretty depressed again, and I moved to Colorado because I figured, hey, why not? You know, it's got to be better there. And I went to Colorado, and there I was. And fortunately, there was meetings there. You know, they have a meeting every day. And this tiny little mountain town. And again, I had like another moment of grace where my higher power was just taking care of me. And he put a woman in my path who had a sparkle about her. And when she told her story, I really identified. She had gotten sober very young, and she was an alcoholic like me. And she had a solution. You know, she had worked the steps, she knew the big book, and she took me through it, and my life started to change from the inside out. Miraculously, you know, in spite of me. I just showed up and did the work, and it changed. My perception changed. I started to feel happy and alive in a way that I had never felt in my entire life. I started to do fellowship, and I felt, you know, connected to the people around me, and I started to let people love me and to love them back and to show up. And I had a very profound experience with the steps. And I want to get to, I moved back to New York, and I became a member of the Atlantic Group, and that changed my sobriety all over again. You know, this is really my home. This is like my sober family. And I take you guys with me. I live in Tokyo now, but you're all very close to me, and I really rely on the foundation that I got here, and I try to carry it on and pass it on. I want to share that, you know, I'm getting to live my dreams today. You know, I don't get everything that I want, but I get everything I need, and I'm living dreams today that I never even occurred to me before. I got to go to the AA Roundup in Bali a few weeks ago, which was such a phenomenal experience. And when I was there, I met some people in the fellowship, and they said, hey, you know, we're going on a sober diet, like scuba diving cruise through Indonesia on a sailboat for 8 days. You want to go? And I was like, that's a little impulsive. But I talked to my husband and my sponsor, and they, you know, gave me the green light and encouraged me to go, and I went, and I survived, and had the time of my life, and we had meetings on the boat. You know, people from all over the world that I didn't know a week before, you know, were having spiritual experiences together on this boat in the middle of nowhere in Indonesia. And that's the hand of AA. That's been my experience of AA. Wherever I go, it's there. You know, I just have to reach out for it. If you're new, I just want to say, you may not know this, if you're sitting here today and you're an alcoholic and you're sober, you just won the jackpot. Most people who have alcoholism die of alcoholism, and you might not have been around long enough to see that happen. But I want to encourage you to stay, to get a sponsor, to do the work in the book, and just watch your life unfold and hang on to your seat. It's so good to be here. I love you all. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Our second 10-minute speaker, Ryan S.
I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. It's really good to be here to be speaking at this meeting. It's an honor. And just to give you a little bit of information about me, I have been sober since August 5th, 2006. My sponsor is Duncan. And I'm reworking my steps, and I'm on step 9. And, you know, I've sat here so many times and heard people give so many good talks. And one thing that I always hear whenever I come here is how people had alcoholic thinking. And that was me from the very start. I grew up in Philadelphia, great mom, great dad, brother, sister, well-loved, good schooling, all these things. But I grew up with this sense of fear, this sense of apartness, this sense of aloneness that I couldn't find any way to resolve. So for me, a lot of my young life was about putting on sort of a people-pleasing nature, putting on a good smile, and just kind of fighting through it. That's kind of the way I lived my life. I remember being a little kid and just trying to do whatever I could to fit in just by smiling and trying to appeal to people because I didn't know really how to relate. To me, that had so much to do with the way I grew up and the way I formed as a person. So the funny thing is I didn't actually start drinking until I went to college. Growing up, my thing was sports. We played a lot of sports in my neighborhood. We, you know, hung out. We talked. We just, you know, it was a pretty stable lifestyle, but I grew up with that fear. You know, I grew up with that anger. When I didn't have those real small moments of happiness, I had these great moments of depression, of sadness, of how am I going to get out of this hole? Who am I? Why am I me? How come this is all there is? In terms of God, growing up, I just didn't really believe. I'm an Episcopalian, and we went to church every week, and it was really boring. So I figured there can't be a God if church is boring, because God didn't mean for church to be boring. So I figured there couldn't be one, so I didn't have one. So my life was really about me. Whatever I determined would happen, and there was nothing really else around. So when I went to college, I was introduced to beer. What a happy day that was. And I'll tell you, from the very beginning, I couldn't stop. Now, for me, a lot of my story is about being functional. See, I grew up learning how to cover what was going on with me. So if you could see this great outlook and a smile, and I'm doing well in school, and everything's going well, and I'm doing well in sports, then I didn't have a problem. I have an aunt who is also an alcoholic who has been in and out of AA since I guess I was a kid. And she's the kind of alcoholic that deserted her family and lost all her teeth and all her money and all that kind of stuff. And to me, that was an alcoholic. Not me. I mean, I'm in school. I'm doing okay. I've got a family. You know, that was my story coming through. So I got through college drinking as much as I could. I skipped classes when I had to. But I tried to maintain whatever I could to get through because I felt like as long as I had it together, there wasn't a problem. So fast forward, I come to New York. I go to school here for graduate school, and I started hanging out with a bunch of people that just showed me what it was really like to drink heavily, and that's what I got into. And drinking for me was power. It was like when I drank, no one could beat me. I knew exactly who I was, or at least I thought I did, and I just felt all powerful. And that seemed to be what I was seeking all this time. So for me, what started out as being the happy drunk who everybody wanted to be around and let's all go out and gathering people together and buying drinks became like the guy that nobody wanted to hang with, the guy that couldn't hold down a relationship, the guy that women ran from, the guy that couldn't really keep my job in my sights because I was too concerned with getting that relief that alcohol provided. When I graduated from graduate school, I got a really great job and I basically got fired from it because I couldn't handle my drinking. But when I got fired, it was all about how it was about them, and I was the victim. So I was able to get some money out of them and come right back to New York and see that proves that I didn't have a problem. So I come to New York, off to the races, and I get caught up with alcohol and all these other great things. And I thought my life was expanding. I thought my friends were expanding. I thought I had this great community of people around me. But really, I had a bunch of leeches and a bunch of people who wanted to take all my money, which they did, and a bunch of people who would subject me to pain and anger and disappointment, which they did, and so did I. And all the while, I was looking at it like, well, you know, I just have to change the people I hang with. So time goes by, and things get worse. I lose my money. I get into lots of bar fights. At one point, I got in a fight where I got 20 stitches in the top of my head, and I had to go to the office the next day and explain why my head was shaved, and there were stitches in my head. So they said, how did that happen? I said, well, I slipped, and I fell kind of like, you know, that Tom and Jerry style of falling. that didn't go over so well, but me being an alcoholic, I thought I just, you know, they didn't see that. They don't know what's going on. Time goes by, and slowly but surely, I get broken. I can't hold it together anymore. I can't go to work on time. I can't get projects done. I'm falling back on whatever small bit of reputation I have, and I'm getting close to being asked to leave. So what did I do? I started my own business because, you know, they don't understand how valuable I am here. So I had to go on my own. And within a month, I lost all of my money. And that was hard. But I still didn't have a problem. So time went by, and I eventually had nothing, no friends, no life. And one day I just went home and cried and didn't know what to do. And it just so happened, talk about God being in your life. I had met a woman like a couple years earlier, and she refused to go out with me because I was such a heavy drinker, but I thought she was just lame. But anyway, she kept up with me over the years, and I just happened to call her when I was feeling this way, and she told me about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I went to a meeting, and all these people got up and talked about how they were an alcoholic, and I got up and I said, you know, I'm not an alcoholic, but I wish all of you luck, and I gotta go. And I went out and did some more research. But eventually I came back, and I settled into the rooms. Now, what it's been like since I've been here, it's, you know, my first 30 days, my first 60 days, my first 90 days, I wanted to leave. I felt this wasn't for me. I had too good a life in my mind. Never mind, I didn't have any money, really didn't have any prospects, nobody really wanted to be around me, but my life was still so good that I didn't need to be here. And I had a hard time turning that off, but with God in my life, people from this room especially kept coming up to me, kept bringing me back, kept bringing me out for fellowship, kept getting me, my sponsor, Kevin, got me into the steps, got me working a program, and I stayed, and I stuck. And I'm a guy that didn't stick before this. You know, I was not a sticker. I was a fake sticker. I liked you to see that I was sticking, but I wasn't really sticking. So, long story short, fast forwarding, it's been almost, what, a year and 10 months now? And I'll tell you, this program for me has saved my life. It gave me a life that I never imagined before. It gave me successes that I never even thought I could attain. And one of the things it did for me, and I'm speaking to the newcomer now, is if you have a lot of fear, I was born and bred and raised in fear. It's all I knew. That's all I knew. I couldn't do anything without having hour-long conversations in my head about what about this scenario and that scenario and thinking through every little response. You know that feeling? That was every day for me, every minute. So it took that away. Hey, you're laughing. It's true. It took that fear away in so many ways. It gave me confidence. It gave me strength. It taught me that doing service to others helps my life. That's something I never would have imagined before I came in here. Working the steps has been my saving grace. Just doing the work, just being present, being there for others. These are things that I just never imagined could be a part of my life, and I never really wanted. And the number one thing that it brought me is it brought me in connection with my higher power. Now, when I started thinking that there even was one, my higher power for me was all about what I can get. You know, oh, this woman is really beautiful. Higher power, please help me out. You know, I really want money. Higher power, please help me out. That was my story. And I just couldn't get out of that cycle. And when I would get something, that was the proof that a higher power was there. And when it got taken away, that was the proof that he wasn't. Now, I know that the higher power is there for me to help me through my life so that I can turn it over. I take the action. He handles the results. And it's that simple. And life has become so much more simple since then. If you're new, one thing I would suggest is if you're having trouble with your program, even if you've been around for a while, stay with it. Work the steps. Work the program. Nothing is given in here. You know, I for so long I was waiting for things just to be given to me. Oh, I want all the cash and prizes and all those things. I've had to work for everything I've gotten in this program. But my life has opened up in ways that I never thought was ever possible. If you're new, just my suggestion is get a sponsor, start working the steps, and stay with it. Stay in the rooms. Keep that honesty, openness, and willingness going. And just listen, see what happens. Your life might change and really, really change for the better. So thank you for having me.
Our main speaker tonight is Laura Kay.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Lorna, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you, Bob, for asking me to speak. And I'm very grateful to be here. I want to actually start as it is today and maybe work backwards and maybe get to some of my drinking at the end. And if you get a resentment, there's always another meeting to go to. But a year ago today, I was told that I had breast cancer. And it's this year, July 1st of 2007. And on the 31st of July last year, I had a double mastectomy. And my breasts were taken off. And I went through the summer, and then in September, the chemotherapy started. And I was fine on the chemotherapy for quite a while. And then in November, boom, my heart started going. And I was, to cut a very long story short, I was in the emergency room of the hospital four times and was very close to dying several times. And it was all kind of dramatic, and at the very end of it, they put a defibrillator in my chest to monitor my heart. But I would like to share that, you know, I consider myself on an intense spiritual path. I'm sober in Alcoholics Anonymous since 76, and next year's an anniversary month for me. And I've considered myself on an intense spiritual path. I've sat in silence for months on end. I've done all sorts of things. I've fasted for 40 days. I've been, you know, to Burma and sat and been in Jerusalem and you name it, I've tried it. And I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've sponsored, I've allowed myself to be sponsored, and all that stuff that I've done on the outside really just heightens this experience. Don't expect this qualification to be linear. It will not be. I just feel that, you know, for myself, Alcoholics Anonymous is not a bridge back to life. Alcoholics Anonymous is a bridge into Alcoholics Anonymous. I feel that this is the deep, deep mystery of my life. And everything I do somehow opens this more. Anyway, there was one time I was really going when I was in the hospital. I was really failing, and I could feel myself failing. I often describe it as like I was just going down this ice wall, and I couldn't be bothered to even go like this and grip it. I could feel myself slipping away. And on duty that particular day happened to be this wonderful, flamboyant gay nurse, and he was there with me, and I said to him, "I'm going, aren't I?" And he said, "Not on my watch, or not." And he just happened to be practiced in meditation practices, and he was able to talk to me and bring me back, and you know, wake me up and break my breathing and give me a reason to stay here, and so. It was all, but the thing that horrified me about that experience was as I was slipping away, as I was going, my thought was not, "Oh, my relatives are down the tunnel," or "Jesus with his open arms," or "I'm going into the Buddhist bardo," or "I'm doing something." My powerful thought was, oh God, I'm going to die and I'm wearing this horrible nightie. And my last, with all this spiritual life to prepare for this intense moment, my big thought was vanity. You know, how do I look? So I think God went, oy vey, you know, let's give her another chance. So I got... So I got to come back so that maybe I can upgrade my thinking for my last moment. But after that, I was whipped into hospital again, and I called friends immediately and said, oh, please bring me some nice pajamas, because I thought I want something pretty to be in. So that's my story in this last year. And I will say that insights for myself are the amount of love and outpouring I had from people in my life. And, you know, I'm an alcoholic, and I've been told that people like me, we're told that people like us, that we're popular, that we're this, we're that, we're the other thing, but until we love ourselves, nothing gets through. It doesn't. It's like an anorexic. You can tell an anorexic, look, you're very thin, and they will still see themselves as fat. And no matter how much you tell the alcoholic, look, you know, you're lovable, you matter, I didn't get it. I know I didn't get it because of how I feel now. And in this illness of mine, I totally, totally did a third step. The steps are always at different levels. There's always a trapdoor in the steps. You can go either down, 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 or ascend up more. There's never, you've done that. You know, they say that the first step you can do perfectly is the first. It is absolutely not true. I cannot do the first step perfectly. If I could do the first step perfectly, I wouldn't need the rest of them. I'm constantly, constantly aware of my powerlessness over alcohol and my powerlessness over the powerful, rapacious nature of the disease of alcoholism. And that awareness leads me into how much I need you, how much I need the steps, how much I need all the rest that goes into AA. So with this incredible outpouring of love, I totally surrendered, and I've ended up with a life. I have no privacy in my life. I don't have a private life anymore. I haven't held on to anything. I think the first shattering of a private life is step 5. You know, and often people say, oh, I didn't want to let you know who I was. You know, I'm so scared of my doing step 5 because I didn't want to let you... Hi, Susan, I'm so glad you made it. I didn't want to let you know who I was. You know, honey, we've seen you coming a mile away. I mean, you know exactly who I am. And that letting go of this thing that's privately me, I'm not. I'm just very garden variety. But so this awareness of the love I've received, something happened to me. Something got through. And it said, Lorna, if you keep on with this self not liking or not thinking you're something in the world, it's a lie. Because everything points to the opposite. I can no longer deny that I don't cast a shadow, that I cast, what's the word? I've always felt that I never cast a shadow. I can no longer deny that I don't matter in people's lives. I matter. People are moved by my life. People care about me. And it's not me, 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 me. It's I don't know what it is, but it's not necessarily just about me. But anyway, it blasted open some kind of doors for me about a great more of a gentle approach to my life and life as a whole and life in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this might not be for everyone, but it's certainly for me where I am. And very often, you know, people will stand up here and speak and they'll say, you know, I hope I can share something that's helpful to you this evening. Well, I'm certainly not here to help you. I would be very arrogant of me to think that I could help you. I'm here because God thinks I need a lot of help. And I get the chance to stand up here and share and hear myself reflected back with my fellows. And so this thing, I was on a silent retreat a couple of months ago, on a two-week silent retreat, and it came to me about the fourth step. And it came to me that I want to do a fearless moral inventory of my goodness, because you see my goodness. And I want to do that, a fearless moral inventory. And it's far more difficult to look at our goodness and our virtues than it is to look at our defects. You know, when we come into the program, we're so full of self-hate, and then we get to step four, and it's like, yeah, let me rip myself to pieces. Let me write it all down and see how terrible I've been, and, you know, and I'm going to do this fifth step with my sponsor. And it came to me that I want to do this fourth step, and you have to, very often for the alcoholic, you'll have to go back quite a way, you know, because in the years before we come into the program, the disease demands that we cater to it, that we're not thinking of others. So I suggest to people I help now that you go back, however far you have to go back, and you have to think of 12 things where you were really, really good. Maybe you gave your baseball mitt to someone. Maybe you helped, you saved an animal. Maybe you were kind to someone that was older or helped someone, talked to someone at school that was being ostracized. Maybe you appreciated a piece of music or a summer evening or something where you were really, really good. And you write that down in all its dimensions. And then you share it with yourself, with God, and another human being. The exact nature of your goodness, generosity, kindness, patience, virtue, equanimity, whatever it is, and then you sit with that, and I own that in myself. I own that, yes, I have those qualities, and because I had them once, they're just buried over. They're still there. They're still there, and that's my nature. That's my basic nature, to be good. And you know, no matter how much asphalt you lay, the little sprout will come through. And no matter what evil or rottenness of thing I've done in my life, that goodness will come through. And then to look at that goodness within myself as my foundation. And then when I do something in life, like I'm not very nice to you or I'm judgmental or something, I see that as a character defect that's hiding the light of that goodness, and then I'm impelled and compelled to, I don't want that character defect, and I see it easily, not as so much a character defect, but as something that's stopping the goodness from growing in my life. So I've begun my talk, which I have, how much longer do I have? Thank you. With this, because I really, because of the illness I have, you know, I don't want to be dramatic, but it's very much in my mind, how much time do I have? And I want to, you know, share that insight. I want to share the feeling of being softer and more loving in a program than ripping myself to pieces, because I do believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is far more about the love, the surging of the love, than about ripping ourselves to pieces. And, you know, yes, we work the program, but a lot of it is done. A lot of it is, you know, it's, if we listen to our sponsors, the sponsors can advise us and guide us of what to do. We don't have to do and suffer like Bill Wilson suffered. We do not have to. We can go, all right, I'll do it your way. And we don't, you know, if I want light, I don't have to invent the light bulb. I do not have to do what Tom Edison did. I can just flip a switch. So a lot of it has been done for us. And that's that. That's my insight right now. This time next year, you can, if I'm still here, you'll get me and we'll share another one. But now, for all that spiritual insight and loving and that, and you might be sitting there very like, ooh, that's wonderful and how nice and terrific. But I know that really what you're going to be impressed with is the fact that I'm in Sex and the City. And and I know that, and I want to share this with you, that I... they called me to do this particular role. That's my profession. I'm an auctioneer, and they called me to be the auctioneer in the thing. And I said, "Oh, well, all right." I said, "You know, how important is my look?" And they said, "It's very important." I said, "Well, my hair's going to start falling out very quickly." So they altered the entire schedule of this filming. Thank you, to get me in before the hair fell out. So I want to say to you that God has a sense of humor, and we never know what is going to happen to us. And here I always thought I would be remembered and immortalized for my spiritual journey and my great wisdom and my insights into the fourth step. But you know jolly well they're going to remember me because I was in Sex and the City. And here I am without my breasts. I had lost my hair. My toenails fell out. I put on huge amounts of weight because of the chemo and all that. And I'm finally a sex symbol. So we have no idea what God has in mind for us. Do you know? No idea whatsoever. So in the little time I have remaining, I want to say that, you know, next month is my anniversary month, and my life drinking can really be characterized and summed up with always missing out. You know how alcoholics are always saying, "Oh, I never felt like I fit in. I never felt like I got the rule book." Well, we don't. I mean, for the most part, we don't fit in. I dressed outrageously. I acted outrageously. Every job has its uniform. But no, I couldn't wear the uniform of my job. And I just was, you know, it was the year of the mini skirts, and I had wore skating skirts. I was just a little over the edge all the time and a little off. And no one ever said to me, "Lorna, you drink too much." People said things to me like, "Shh." Or, "Do you mind?" Or, you know, what you thought was amusing was really very spiteful. And I would say for anyone that's new, I know there's a lot of new people in the room because I heard the roll call for the one-year anniversaries, that it took me 2 years of being sober to understand that I had alcoholism. It took me 2 years. For the long time, I thought I'd nipped it in the bud, that I didn't have it that badly, that I'd been sort of lightly dusted with alcoholism, that I didn't really have the disease. And it took me all that time to realize that, you know, everything, to not use the words, "I'm the sort of alcoholic." I'm not the sort of alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. I have alcoholism. It's not a sort of alcoholism. This is not a category of alcoholism. I have alcoholism. And anything any alcoholic has ever done under the influence of alcohol, I'm capable of doing. I can never say, "Oh, I'd never do that." From child molesting to whatever they get up to, we get up to. I mean, things that I find repugnant when I hear them, if I pick up a drink, I'm capable of doing. How often did my standards lower to meet what I was doing? So, you know, I can never be so arrogant as to say, "Oh, I'd never do that." I'm not a sort of alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic. And so anything anyone has ever done to stay sober, I'm compelled to do. I can't say, well, I don't need to do that or I don't need to do this. And one of the things I always like to really go for is get the alcohol out of the house. And any alcoholic that has alcohol in their house, no matter for what reason they say it's there, it's got their name on it. And I had a very, very scary incident when I first came in the program. I was about 10 months sober. I had an accident at home, and I immediately went to the cabinet to get out the vodka bottle, and it wasn't there because I'd done what you told me to do. You know, AA crashed. The whole thing crashed. And if to get the alcohol out of one's house is a deepening of the first step, it's a more radical commitment to the first step. And I just am very, I always say that people that don't smoke don't keep cartons of cigarettes in their house for when smokers drop by. And Orthodox Jews don't have ham and Swiss cheese in the fridge, and Muslims don't have a side of pork in the deep freeze or anything like that. So, and I often say, I've yet to go to someone's house and they have little piles of cocaine and heroin on the table, and they've got the syringes and the works, and they say, well, we don't shoot up, but maybe you'd like to. So I want to say this in a very definite way. The deepening of step one, the absolute, I want a radical life. I don't want a sort of life. I didn't drop acid because I wanted an ordinary day. There's something within me that longs for the extraordinary. And I think very often in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're told, no, you've got to be the middle way. You've got to be, get right size. Well, who said right size was smaller? Who says right size not the size of the universe? Who says that, I think we automatically think get right size, well, I must minimize myself and I must be humble and I must be... No, we're the light unto the nations. I mean, it's absolutely true. You and I have a phenomenal power, a phenomenal, incredible power, and that is I'm able to raise the dead. I have the power to raise the dead. I know how to say, I know how you feel. Let me tell you what happened to me. And I want to share, because it's such a large group, and I always like to share this story because I think it's so inspirational and people are very often moved by it. Do I have time? One thing I love about AA is it starts on time and it ends on time. And a lot of you know I was very close with Mother Teresa, and one time she was really ill and I went off to Calcutta and they took me immediately into the hospital room. And she was in bed, and very shortly after, it was a very tiny, tiny room, and very shortly after I got there, this young priest came to say Mass, and they set up the table that the patient eats off at the foot of the bed, and they set it up as the altar, and this priest was facing Mother saying Mass. Now, I'm squashed in next to her like this. There's another nun standing here, and there's two others on the other side of the bed, and we're all like this. And he's saying Mass, and it's not lost on me that I'm with Mother Teresa in bed in her nightie, and we're having this very private Mass. I'm thinking, woo. He's saying Mass, and then it comes time for communion, and he comes around to the side of the bed, and Mother's propped up on the pillars, and she pushes herself forward, and she's very reverential, and he dipped the host into the chalice, and he's holding up this dripping host, and she takes it on her tongue. Then he turns to me, and I'm thinking, oh God, not here, please, not here. Not with this saint dying in bed in front of beside me. No, don't let me have to make a fuss. Don't let me have to call all the attention onto myself. Let it just sail away this one time. It's not alcohol. It's the blood of Christ. And, just take it. Just take it. Surrender your thing to that. And the next thought in front of me was all of you. was all of the people that have gone before me, all the thousands that will come after me. And it matters what I do. It matters how I live my life. It matters my choices in the darkness. Everything is revealed. It matters what I do. It mattered that in complete obscurity, Bill Wilson turned in that lobby in that hotel and went in the other direction. There was no one to see him, no one to say well done, no one to say this is what you do, and he went there. And because he did that, you and I are sitting here. So it matters how we choose. And I said to him, no, please, I don't. And he's holding up this, you know, dripping hose to me. And I said, I don't want it dipped in wine. Can you please give me that? And he gave this to the sister standing next to me, and he gave me a dry hose. And he's all a little nervous, too. And he walks around the side of the bed, and I'm standing there feeling really awkward, really shaken that I have done this. And Mother's hand comes across the covers. She takes my hand and she pulls me down to her to talk to me, and she whispers, well done, you must continue to protect your precious gift. And I want to tell you that you and I have this amazing, amazing gift. And Mother Teresa was fascinated with AA. I would often joke with her, are you sure you don't have a problem, Mother? You know? And Mother had success with every form of suffering human, but she could not help the alcoholic. She could not help the alcoholic because she did not have the gift that you and I have. And that gift is she didn't know how to raise the dead. She didn't have the words of eternal life. And those words are, I know how you feel. Let me tell you what happened to me. So this idea of the gift and how we live our lives and the quality of our lives, and because of my life is what it is now and what has happened to me in this last year, I have an extreme desire to live it even more extremely, to live it in this diamond-like way. You know, why would God call me to something like this, to have it like get by, to have it so that I could have a great job and a great relationship and a great this? I want the boom. And I have that longing in me. And, you know, as an alcoholic, I think lots of people identify that thing for the high road, that thing to be called into something very, very different. This, yes, it is not about drinking, and that's, but once we're into this, we have a chance to really whoosh, and it's a struggle. Many times it's a struggle. And that incident I went through in Mother's bedroom, in the hospital room, you know, spiritual life is not comfortable. Don't look for comfort. Don't think, oh, well, I'm not comfortable, so therefore my program must be wrong. I must be doing something wrong. Spiritual life isn't always comfortable. Sometimes it's very nice, but most of the time it's a little thorny. I mean, there was Jesus on the cross. I don't think he said, you know, well, this feels like the ticket. This feels really comfortable. Do you know, it's... spiritual life does not call us to be comfortable. And if you're in here, strap yourself in and go for the ride. And so that's it for me. That's it where I am today. That's what I hope for. My experience, strength, and my hope is my hope. I always get pulled to not compromise to, you know, that my sobriety is not the most important thing in my life. Alcoholics Anonymous is the most important thing in my life. And can I be this member and the privilege of being in Alcoholics Anonymous and really get that and take it in my own life into the highest level I possibly can? So, it was an odd qualification, huh? But anyway... I want to thank you so much for asking me to speak. I want to thank you so much for being here, for doing service, for being my friend, for all the support. My dear friend Susan is here, who gives me such amazing service and love. And I want to thank you all for going to meetings and doing what you do, because if you were not here, I'd be absolutely at sea. So thank you for your sobriety.